The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. It's going to be a bloodbath if he's not elected this year. It's going to be another insurrection. I'm sorry. You know, the craziness that is the United States of America right now. What can I say? That whole thing about the insurrection, you know, the way the Democrats just lie openly and completely distort what former President Trump says. Just astounding. We'll have to talk a bit about that this morning. But the way that people like Morning Joe Scarborough, and gosh, even Elon Musk coming to President Trump's defense. Keith Olbermann, of course, who has been off the rails for how many years now. Personnel bloodbath at my alma mater. Well, one of them, ESPN. Good evening and welcome to the end of your careers. The New York Times and Washington Post correctly recognize the specific use doesn't matter. It's the new Trump rhetoric of bloodbath that counts. Oh, just amazing. We'll have to have a little conversation about that here this morning. Cliff Bantz, Congressman Cliff Bantz, is going to join me here in just a few minutes, and we're going to dig into a few issues, and I'm looking forward to that talk. It's great to get him on from D.C., so we'll certainly have that coming up. We have some stuff that's not so serious, too. A great look back at the golden age of television with Emmy-winning director and producer Jeff Margolis. And he has a great book out. It's called We're Live in Five. And he talked about how he got into television back in the golden days from his cousin, Monty Hall of Let's Make a Deal. And it's just a great story. There are so many great celebrity stories in here. I'm going to have to ask him how he ended up getting Cher's birthday present one time. Cher got a birthday present, but Jeff Margolis ended up actually getting it. It's a great story. There's a whole lot of great stories from Hollywood. The golden age of television, 1960s, 70s, and through the 1980s or so. Jeff, it's really an interesting story, so we'll have that coming up too. And, of course, your calls and opinion on everything important this morning. And I do believe that the bat phone ringing from Washington, D.C., Congressman Cliff Bantz. Is that you, Congressman? Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Bill. It's great to be with you this morning, as usual.
Glad you're able to take a few minutes here this morning. By the way, have you seen how the liberal media has once again talked about everything involving former President Trump, the bloodbath comment over the weekend when he was referencing the auto worker, how it became, you know, the insurrection is back. Have you seen that? I don't know if you kept track of that over the weekend or not.
I saw a little bit of it. I generally, as you might guess, don't spend too much time on the exaggerations by the liberal media. It's a huge waste of time when we're trying to actually finally get our budget passed. That's the truth of it, Bill.
I know, but if you hadn't seen it, though, I just wanted to make, because that's all I was hearing. That's all I was seeing on the blogs, and especially if you were on Twitter. It was like Twitter was just like bloodbath, bloodbath, bloodbath every other post or so. But we'll set that aside for right now. Yeah, consider the source here. Hey, so you say you got all the budgets passed. Give us the update on that, if you could. Just tell us where we are right now, because the way I'm looking at it, we're still broke. Of course, you know that, but break it down, if you could.
Right. So we've passed about half of the budget bills. There are 12 of them, and we have six to go. And it gets a little confusing. But we need to pass the defense appropriation, the Homeland Security appropriation, is the budget for the border, for example. Health and Human Services appropriation, the financial services, and the state foreign appropriation. And so those are all going to be put into one bill. There had been a lot of negotiation over the weekend, which I was not party to. I'm not on appropriations, but I saw them here. And so there's much debate about whether to carve Homeland Security away and bring it separately. But my understanding of a couple of hours ago is that the Homeland Security bill will be part of the single bill containing all of these budgets. And by that budget, I mean appropriations. That's where we are. The understanding is you got to have 72 hours to see the bill. I've not seen the bill or bills. There's a 72-hour requirement, so I anticipate we'll see them this afternoon, and then we will be voting on them on Thursday or Friday if it turns out that they don't get them to us until tomorrow. But I have not seen them yet. They are definitely a work in progress.
How many congressmen, how many pages of legislation is on this spending bill? Do you know off the top of your head?
I have no idea, but thank goodness we have 72 hours to fight our way through it. I know the last couple, just the summary was 30 or 40 pages long.
Okay.
Just the summary.
Okay, well, so if just the summary is 30 or 40 pages, you may have several hundred pages of legislation then. Is that correct? Of spending?
I think that would be extremely conservative.
Conservative? Oh.
That.
You know, but, you know, this ends up being a very interesting question. I imagine the obvious question that people from home are asking here would be, how can any congressperson make an informed vote on everything if you have several hundred pages of legislation that is written and you only have 72 pages or 72 hours to be able to look them all over? And the other thing I would ask is that, why would you only have 72 hours? Because is Congress actually involved in the writing? Who actually writes those bills? And I know I'm getting a little bit in the weeds here, but these are the kind of questions I always wonder. It's like, you know, you're the Congress people, but does somebody else write the bill?
Well, staff writes the bill, and mm-hmm. the Congress, the members of the committees are the ones that are in negotiating the bill. And then it gets extraordinarily involved because, I don't, like you said, the weeds. I'll just say that that's why we have, there's a lot of work to be done here, and that's why we break it into committees.
Oh.
And you have specific people who take care of each space. So, for example, Congressman Mike Simpson out of Idaho is the chairperson of the Interior bill. It's one of the 12 appropriation bills, and he's the top person on the Republican side and the chairman of that committee. So he has the most to say about what's going to be in that appropriations bill.
Mm-hmm.
The leadership actually comes in and says to Mike Simpson and the other 11, because there's 12 of, so these people are called cardinals, and each one of the cardinals, the chairpersons of those committees, are told how many total dollars they're going to have to allocate in their budget. And so it's their job then to make all of the laundry list of, that's an understatement, the incredibly long list of parts of the budget fit into that number. That's how that works. And then we, because it is so intensive, they've been working literally for months and months and months on each of these 12 bills. And just to make things more exciting, we Republicans said we're not going to cram all of these things into a single omnibus kitchen sink, as I call it, bill, and
yeah.
then give it to him the night before Christmas, which is what the Democrats had done over the past number of years. And that instead, what we said we'd do is bring each bill forward and have people have the opportunity to file amendments. And we got, of course, I think on the NDAA, something like 1,500 amendments. So I'll tell you, Bill, this is not a simple approach. We're trying to do it, giving everybody a chance to go in and swing.
You know, some congressmen, I'm glad you explained just a little bit about it. When you talk about even 1,500 amendments, you know, that's just no wonder it is deep and getting swampier all the time here. It's kind of the challenge, the way the sausage is made there. But thanks for trying to explain a little bit of it. We'll pull out of the weeds here at the moment, all right? Something I did want to ask you about. Last week, the Capitol was all abuzz about the TikTok divestiture bill. Could you tell us exactly what this does? And then I had a couple of other follow-up questions.
Right. So what it does is it says to the Chinese company that controls TikTok, you have to divest, you have to sell TikTok and no longer own it. You can't own it any longer. You can't own a platform such as TikTok that's hugely, hugely popular, 170 million U.S. viewers, 170 million. And so very, very popular. And it's controlled through algorithms that are written by, I suppose, many people, but the bottom line is the entity is controlled out of one of our adversaries, China. And so we don't want to let foreign adversaries control the information that goes to our kids. And we don't want them, our children, exposed to manipulated data and other messages. And that's exactly how TikTok works. And it's not to say it's the only one, but it is one of them that is owned, controlled by a foreign adversary. And so the folks that are in charge of trying to figure out how in the world to keep us safe came in and said, look, we can't let our children be controlled by information that is being manipulated by somebody who is trying to hurt the United States. And I guarantee you, China is not a friend of ours in the context of either economics or, for that matter, military things. So, yeah, this is the idea here is to say, look, if there's a foreign adversary that's controlling the message and then manipulating people, you can't own that type of platform and use it here in the United States. And Bill, complicated. But that's in general how it works.
Congressman Cliff Betz on the program this morning. Congressman, a touch in on this. Is there a case to be made that TikTok actually may have made its case for voting for this bill when it pushed a notification to its 170 million or so users telling them to call Congress? I was getting reports that there were kids calling Congress claiming they were going to commit suicide if anything happened to a TikTok. I'm just wondering if that actually had a the opposite of the intended effect.
Well, it certainly, okay, we got all kinds of calls here at our office, many of them very, very young, 8 years old, for example, and saying, don't take my TikTok away. And that was, of course, prompted by the Chinese owners of TikTok. That's what they did. I mean, they basically said, hey, we'll go ahead and we'll show everybody how this system works by telling all these people to contact their Congress folks and tell them how they want this to work. And you are absolutely right. Whoever dreamed that idea up was basically proving the case against our adversaries that don't have our best interests at heart. And it's difficult when you have little kids calling and saying, "Hey, don't take what I like my entertainment away." How would an 8 year old know how they're being manipulated?
Yeah, that's true.
And so what? So the idea here is let's we don't want to ban TikTok, as everybody's saying, because these folks are free to sell it. There's a number of different people trying to figure out how to buy it, and people can still have their TikTok, but it won't be being manipulated by somebody that is a foreign adversary, and that would be China.
Why is Congress so upset with TikTok over national security, though, Congressman Benz? Because the border's wide open. You have millions of illegals of military fighting age now here. There doesn't appear to be all that much of an interest in national security in Washington, D.C. Why all of a sudden the focus on TikTok? Could you explain that, maybe?
Yeah, well, there's a 170 million people using TikTok. Uh-huh. And this is not to say that the 10 million that President Biden has allowed across the border is a small number. I'll just say that we Republicans are definitely interested in the border, and that's why we passed H.R. 2 that has the type of laws in it, if the Senate would take it up, and the Senate has not, that would address the border. But you're right. There's certainly on the Democrat side a failure to take the border into account the way that we think they should.
Or at least a lack of consistency on national security issues. You know, you pick on this particular hot-button issue, all right? Something else that many listeners have written to me about, and this may be outside of your purview, but there is so much conversation within the culture about central bank digital currencies and the desire to push things to a more cashless society. Is that something that you're getting much attention on? And is this not something that Congress would have to approve? And because I'm a little bit concerned, you're familiar, no doubt, with this concept out there of having programmable money, money that could essentially be programmed and controlled by the federal government via the Federal Reserve. Have you had much conversation about that? I get people writing me about it consistently.
Right. Well, I've had a little, and like all these issues back here that are of interest, they're complicated. I will share with you that I had occasion to speak with one of the senior members of the Finance Committee when I was at a Republican retreat down in West Virginia a few days ago, and we had just heard from one of our speakers, Howard Lutnick, a very, very an incredible speaker, the owner, the CEO of a New York Wall Street investment firm, who lost 600 of his employees on 9/11. 600 of his one brother and others, 600. And he came in to talk to us about how he rebuilt that company. And then he, toward the end of his speech, he began to talk about the incredible value of the American dollar. And he said, look, if you go anywhere in the world, the American dollar is the currency, period. Mm-hmm. And there's nobody else that has that faith in the foundation of the dollar. And so I was speaking with Andy Barr, is the Congressman Barr, about this exact issue, because Howard Lutnick had spoken about it at length, and he'd talked about how we need to be careful with that dollar and make sure that however we approach the digital currency issue that you're talking about, we do so with appropriate regard to the reserve currency status our nation enjoys and has earned. This didn't just happen.
Because you would understand that inherently that a currency which could be turned on and off essentially digitally and controlled by the federal government would no longer really want to be used by anybody outside of here.
You've hit it right. You are absolutely right. One of the things that a foreign currency, one of the reasons that foreign countries and people in them are happy with the dollar is because it's anonymous. When they have a dollar bill, it's theirs, and they can do with it as they want, and nobody would know the difference. So whatever happens on the technology side of the dollar, it has to take into account that anonymity of use. And so this is one of the many issues that goes with currency. I find it extraordinarily interesting. But you know what? I'm not on that committee. So there.
But is this something that would be going through Congress first? Because my concern is that it would be imposed by the banking system more so than something actually regulated by the government itself.
Well, I would, if I have anything to say about it, it'll be going through Congress. And the reason is it's so important to the future of this country and to the stability of our currency and our reserve currency status. So it better go through Congress.
Okay. Congressman Cliff Bantz, what else are you working on this week that we should be paying attention that maybe it's not the sexiest thing, but you think it's actually very important? What's on your mind?
Well, I think the Wolf hearing that I'm working on in the committee that I have the privilege of chairing, the Water, Wildlife, and Fisheries Subcommittee, and we're going to have a Wolf hearing in at my direction, and we're going to have it in Minnesota. And the reason is the wolves up there are eating all of their deer, and there's other reasons. They have far more wolves, and thank goodness we only have, so the folks say, about 200 wolves in Oregon, but they have literally hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, in our northern states. And so we're working on that. We're working on all kinds of issues having to do with elections. As you know, the last day to file was last week on Tuesday, and so there's all kinds of people talking about who filed and who did it. And there's much discussion about Lauren Boebert over in Colorado and Ken Buck deciding to resign. Lauren's trying to rerun for his position. A lot of that's driving a lot of talk. There's some discharge positions on the floor, two of them. And the way that works is if the speaker doesn't want to bring your bill up, if you can find 218 people to sign a petition, then that bill will come to the floor. There are two discharge petitions right now that are being talked about, both having to do with Ukraine. And one of them has 177 signatures on it. And so that may come up depending. It hardly ever happens. But we have a lot of strange things happening this session.
That's pretty wild. If that, in other words, 177 votes so far to bring funding for Ukraine forward. Is that what that would be? What I'm hearing then?
I haven't seen the petition. I won't be signing it, but I will say that. The petition has in it a remain in Mexico policy on one side to try to get people to sign.
Yeah.
It has Ukraine also in it. And so there's a number of other elements in that petition. So I have not read it. I don't think it will ultimately prevail. I don't plan on signing it. But it's got a bunch of stuff in it, including the funding for Ukraine.
Would it be fair? Is the general consensus that throwing more money at Ukraine would be good money after bad, or what? What, or is there a consensus on it at this point? What's your opinion on that?
There's no consensus. There's no consensus. I'll tell you that there's a much discussion about Israel, much discussion about Ukraine, much discussion about how much money should go to both. I think on the Republican side, I don't want to say unanimous, but pretty close to a support for Israel. I'm certainly supportive, and the challenge there is to try to figure out also what is the long run plan. I met with a number of supporters of Israel last week, and it was a very interesting discussion of what is the long term plan now that Gaza is the focal point of everything, and how in the world is that situation going to be resolved? It's been literally thousands of years in the making, and trying to fix it is really something.
Yeah. You know, if you want to make some news, what you could do is take a page from Senator Chuck Schumer, who called for new elections in Israel. Sure, it's not going to happen. And, of course, he's getting a lot of criticism for that. You could always call for a do-over of the 2020 election.
Well, I'll just say that... I wish Leader Schumer had not done that. I mean, come on, these folks were the Israelis were attacked, and they absolutely have the right to try to defend themselves, and that's what they're engaged in doing. It's an extremely difficult situation, and horribly damaging to lots and lots of people. But they have the right to defend themselves.
All right. Congressman Cliff Benz, we appreciate you coming on, and you be well. Thanks for sharing a few minutes this morning, okay?
You're so welcome, Bill. Thank
you. Okay, keep your head above the swamp water, okay? Do your best if you can. All right? Thank you.
Goodbye.
Bye now. It's 6:35 at KMED, KCMD. You're on the Bill Myers Show.
At Batteries Plus, we want to know, what moves you? Is it an SUV or a motorcycle or a golf cart or a boat? Whatever moves you drives us. Batteries Plus, bringing power to your life. Stop in or shop online at batteriesplus.com.
If you want to enjoy everything an active and vibrant senior community has to offer, the Springs at Anna Maria Medford is the right lifestyle option for you. Life is easier living among friends and neighbors in stylish private apartments with large balconies, all while fully supported by our team of dedicated caregivers and service professionals. The Springs at Anna Maria is located in a quiet neighborhood close to Rogue Regional Hospital. Call to schedule a tour of the independent and assisted living community, 541-774-1822.
You've heard us say it for years. The pests, mold, and allergens under your home impact the air you breathe inside your home. That's where Terra Firma Foundation Systems comes in. Dark and damp areas are breeding grounds for mold and mildew. Warming spring temps add humidity, making your crawl space a greenhouse. Stop the cycle. Terra Firma can turn your crawl space into a clean, dry, protected space. Visit goterrafirma.com to schedule your free evaluation today. CCB 173-547. That's goterrafirma.com.
Ask Sherwin-Williams during the March Spring Sale, March 15th through the 25th, and get 35% off paints and stains with prices starting at $28.92. That means 35% off our most popular color family, blue. Psychologists have found it to be soothing and relaxing, which makes it especially great for bedrooms and bathrooms. And of course, get 35% off all of our other colors. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Retail sales only, some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Hi, I'm Corey with Patriot Electric, and I'm on KMED and KCMD.
6:37, appreciate you being here. We'll catch up with our NBC5 News partners and also talk a little bit about Oregon Republican Party politics. We'll get Holly Morton on here in just a moment. And I guess there was a big election over the weekend about who is going to be the national chairperson, or I'm not really, whatever it is, Solomon Yu is out. I know Solomon Yu is out. That's about all I know about it. And Holly, you just text message me. I'll give you a call here during the news break here. And also breaking news that we ended up announcing on Friday night is that a lawsuit has been filed against the Oregon Secretary of State over the Christine Goodwin candidacy, challenging Noah Robinson for State Senate District 2 for that primary, in that primary battle in the Republican Party. Because the claim is that Christine Goodwin doesn't live in the district. We'll tell you more about that, too, all coming up. Doing your own taxes and lost in the paperwork and questions that you can't answer? Peace of mind is only a phone call away. As a former Internal Revenue agent, Pat Hurley can help you relax. Call him at 774-1040. What an easy number.
March is Maintenance Madness Month at Kelly's Automotive Service in Grants Pass in Medford. We want to remind you to check your fluids at least once a month to help avoid costly repairs. When you come in for any service at Kelly's, we do a thorough inspection that includes pictures and videos of the good and not so good of your car that are texted and emailed directly to you. You then decide what to fix and how to plan for the future. Check us out at kellysautomotive.com. Kelly's Automotive Service, where we service your vehicle but take care of you.
News sponsored by Caveman Heating and Air. It's the climate and we control it. Call Caveman Heating and Air at 541-476-0009 or cavemanheating.com.
Good morning. I'm Natalie Cerna with your NBC5 Morning News Update. Medford's regional hazmat team taught first responders how to safely handle hazardous materials. Last week at the Grants Pass Hillcrest Fire Station, Medford's Hazmat Team 8 held a four-hour training course on responding to incidents involving hazardous materials. Personnel suited up in full hazmat gear for one portion of the training. The class served as a follow-up for a previous training course. Then the statewide Battle of the Books competition continued Saturday with middle schoolers. The battles were held at the Rogue River Elementary School campus. Several teams from different middle schools tested their knowledge on a selection of books. Each year, teams are challenged to read 16 books and are asked comprehension questions. The teams that answer the most questions accurately advance through the tournament. Participating students say they enjoy collaborating with their teams and diving into diverse stories. Saturday, the Rogue River Elementary School sixth graders came out victorious against the Valley School of Southern Oregon team. Rogue River will advance to the state competitions April 13th in Salem. That's a look at your morning headlines for NBC5 News. I'm Natalie Cerna, and for local news anytime, head on over to our website, KOBI5.com, or our Facebook, KOBI TV NBC5, where we have the latest look at the news and weather in the Rogue Valley. Have a great Monday.
An intelligent solution saves you money. This is Randall at Advanced Air. It takes an expert to navigate the current HVAC rebates. Call Advanced Air to save big on equipment replacement. Advanced Air is currently offering an additional rebate on qualifying systems, up to $1,000 on Bryant mini split and crossover heat pumps. Some exclusions apply. Advanced Air and Bryant do whatever it takes to deliver intelligent heating and cooling solutions. Visit myadvancedair.com for details.
Your intelligent heating and cooling solution. Visit myadvancedair.com.
106.3 KMED, 99.3 KCMD, and this is the Bill Myers Show.
It's 19 before 7, Monday, the 18th of March. We made it through the Ides of March, I guess. And we're at 42 degrees, going to be a nice warm day, nice warm week, really. Maybe some rain coming back Wednesday night, Thursday morning. We'll talk about that with Mr. Outdoors next hour, around 7:30, different time this morning. And joining me right now is Josephine County Republican Party Chair Holly Morton. Hello, Holly. Welcome back. And big doings over the weekend when it came to state leadership of the Oregon Republican Party. Why don't you break it down? Because Solomon Yu, who I've not been a real big fan of, is gone. Tell me about that if you don't mind. Yeah, what happened?
Yeah, it was interesting. First of all, Tracy Honnold, the incumbent for National Committee Woman, was reelected, which was good. We were all happy about that. And then Solomon Yu came up, and I think because he had a fancy website and sent out a bunch of stuff and had Kerry Lake and very...
Oh, yeah, by the way, before you move forward, what was Solomon Yu? What position did he hold, and why was it important, okay? And maybe if you could kind of break down, because a lot of people don't understand it's kind of inside baseball. So if you could help us understand the inside baseball,
sure.
Holly, okay?
So Solomon Yu was the national committee man, which is the interface between the Oregon Republican Party and the Republican National Committee.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's the one who's supposed to, get money for us and create connections and that kind of thing over the years. And he has, I think a lot of people feel like he hasn't really delivered on a lot of those promises. He's been talking about bringing Trump here for 5 years and says he has a personal relationship and Trump's on the way, but, nothing ever happens. So people got a little weary of that interface, and we're looking for a different kind of leadership.
That's interesting. I remember a few years ago, you recall Sam Carpenter, who was a candidate for governor a few years ago. You remember him?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Sam was an interesting cat, and I talked with him, and he ended up leaving the state. He got kind of disgusted with the state party politics issue. And he and others that I've known that have left were looking at Solomon Yu as almost like a controlled opposition kind of guy who was more or less happy to. Now, I don't know if you can comment on this or not, but I'm telling you the way Sam Carpenter related it to me. In fact, he said, in other words, the idea is to lose and to lose gracefully and to not really get too conservative and to not rock the boat too much. That's kind of the way he was describing Solomon Yu's influence. Would you think that's a fair assessment of what was going on there, given what's happened with Oregon Republicans?
I would say this. He had set up the Oregon government so that he was kind of in control. So we had elected officials, the chair, the vice chair, and so forth. These elected officials were almost subordinate to him in the way it was set up. And so there's an executive committee, and that has been the problem for many years. They kind of controlled what the elected officials from, the various PCPs and delegates who go up there, That was the problem. He sort of controlled it, and people weren't always in agreement with that, and it created almost like a little shadow government type thing. It's always been divided, and people were just sick of it, absolutely sick of it through the years. And many, many times we tried to recall Solomon Yu, I think it's just about a year ago, and weren't able to do it.
Didn't you lose it? Didn't they lose it by like one or two votes? It was a handful of votes from what I recall.
It was 8 votes. Oh, but it's quite a big group. It's 8 votes. And I think people just were not well informed. And he's a very persuasive sort of an individual, I think. I think a lot of people feel, great about him. If you talk to a lot of people, they just think he's the greatest thing since sliced bread. But most of the people that have been around a long time, Bob Tierman, a lot of those people are just, we were just done. We were ready to move on.
All right. So now that you've explained what happened and what got us to this point, who ended up replacing Solomon Yu?
Well, it was kind of an interesting thing. Dan Mason, but let me explain how it happened because it was fascinating. There were 4 gentlemen who ran for national committee man. And when the votes came in, one guy was way on the low side and a great guy, but not quite ready for prime time. So he was going to be taken off from the next vote. It was almost like ranked choice voting. So mm-hmm. Then what happened? You had the 3 guys left. Don Powers, who's a fantastic guy, election integrity specialist. He was number 1. He was way ahead of the other people by probably 20%. So they allow each one of those speakers to speak one more time. They got up and each one spoke. And Solomon Yu, who had a decent amount of votes, said, look, I have decided I'm going to jump out of the race. He, saving face is everything to Chinese people. So he said, I'm going to have to jump out of the race. My dad is sick. I need to move on.
Yeah, he realized that the vote wasn't going to go his way. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I am asking that everyone who vote for me vote for Dan Mason. So not Don Powers, Dan Mason. A lot of people were confused with those names. But and Dan's a perfectly good guy. I wouldn't say a negative thing about him.
Now, is Dan the one who won? Is Dan the one who won? Because part of me is if Solomon Yu was going to tell someone to vote for him, it's like, to me, that's almost like the kiss of death, you know, to me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, no, because there are a lot of people. He had 31 votes or something like that. I think Don had 51 and, you know, something like that. So Solomon Yu asked everyone who voted for him to throw their votes to Dan. So it was kind of like a ranked choice voting. The person who ranked third out of four in the, you know, original vote ended up becoming the national committee man, which is not the way we want to do things. We've got to work on some of that kind of stuff. That was just, I think a lot of people were really disappointed. Not so much. I mean, Dan's a fine guy. I'm not going to.
Okay, so who's the one? So it's Dan? Dan's the one who got it?
Dan Mason is our new national committee man.
All right. So I'm just hoping it's just not Solomon Yu light. That's all I'm getting at, because, like I said, I've had multiple candidates over the years say, you know, and they were losing candidates for the most part. And I'm talking about mainstream candidates, not necessarily just, you know, the hard right or the lefty side of the Republican world. But they were saying they were so disheartened with the way the Republican Party, that liaison, you know, between the Oregon Republican Party and the National Republican Party, where we're getting along, just wasn't working for them.
I don't think Dan is Solomon Yu light. I don't think he's in that camp. But Don had been sort of fighting against Solomon, and so Solomon wanted to make sure that Dan didn't get the position. And that's what he achieved that.
Wow, this really is like a student council, except we're just adults, huh? Just like student council election, isn't it?
You know, it sometimes it's hard to watch, and what's really hard to watch is you get 126 delegates up there voting, something like that, and you look at the man hours involved. For the private sector, you know, people would be jumping off the ship, because you just don't spend those kind of hours achieving so little. It's just very frustrating to me. Because I'm a private sector kind of a person, more so.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Oregon Republican Party, is this a reform choice then to finally get the Oregon Republican Party more in gear? Because arguably it is a weak state Republican Party. Would that be a fair assessment overall? Or am I wrong about that?
I think I could say that in the past that has been the case, but I think things are getting better now. There are some great people in there. I think Tracy Honnell's a really good national committee woman. She works very hard. I like her. And Justin,
he's the chair, right? Justin,
he's the chair. Justin, mm-hmm. Our chair. He's an immigrant, very hardworking guy, nice guy. I think we're headed in the right direction. But I think the next election for the officers is going to be in January or February of this upcoming year. And I think that's going to be the turning point. That's my expectation of it. I'm looking at the people that are coming forward in those positions, and I think there's a guy named Brian Bishop. He's a terrific guy. He came in as the treasurer, straightened up a lot of our problems. He's a terrific guy. And I said, Brian, you know, you need to run for chair. And he said, yeah, he's thinking about it.
Okay.
So, really good guy. I think he would straighten things up. He's a businessman. He's from the private sector. He's all about business, and he gets things done.
Holly,
and Angela Plowhead is our vice chair. She's also I think she's a really nice, very nice person. I think she wants things to go well, and she works hard.
All right. Well, I'm hoping that we can get some reform going on in the Oregon Republican Party, because the big challenge that I've seen is that there has been open hostility against conservative candidates and conservative people there from the caucus, and no real discipline coming from the Oregon Republican Party. I'm talking about like the legislative caucuses, and the Oregon Republican Party doesn't seem see fit to jump in these things, and then Republicans then go on to lose gracefully, right? As we've been talking about, especially statewide issues here. Is that a fair assessment, or am I being unfair? You know, in my
no,
characterization.
I think that's a pretty fair assessment. I think, you know, that what's happening is that there's such a balance, a negative balance of Democrats to Republicans, that people in the caucus feel that they really have to make a lot of concessions to get anything done at all. And, you know, we see Dwayne Yunker come in, and he's like, no, that'll be a no. I'm just not doing that. We're not going to make concessions.
Yeah, and yeah. And then, of course, you know, Dwayne, of course, being the smart guy, as far as I'm concerned, just saying no. And then, of course, set on fire by the Daily Courier, which I wouldn't. Oh, look at all the money that's left. In other words, the job of the state legislature is to get money. You know, is to get money, you know, for local projects. It's just, oh,
well,
no wonder it's so corrupting, you know.
Mm-hmm. That's nice, but it's not nice if you're conceding really important things. And we just have to stop doing that. That's been driving a lot of us crazy. You know, you have a lot of Republican-like Republicans up there, and it just, you know, we feel that if everybody went in fighting and said, we're just not going to do this, that they would have to start conceding a little bit, because it seems like every time, you know, we move a little bit to the left, they move further to the left. Now we've gotten to the place where we've got bills like 2002, where it's okay to mutilate kids without their parents' permission.
Yeah, and for some reason to deny quorum over there, you know, to stop the chopping off of kids' body parts, you know, for, you know, a fantasy in some cases, or something that someone may grow out of, is, well, you're not doing your job. I know I'm replaying the old tapes on Measure 113 arguments. All right. Holly Morton and Josephine County Republican Party Chair. All right. Now, the breaking news came out Friday. This was a big deal heading into the weekend, and I'm surprised the other places have not picked up on this one yet, other media outlets, though. But a lawsuit filed, and, of course, Richard Emmons reporting from the Oregon Eagle, OregonEagle.com, and I put that into my Facebook live feed, the updated link for this one. And Commissioner John West and a bunch of other Grants Pass residents have filed suit against the Secretary of State. And they want Christine Goodwin yanked off the Oregon State Senate District 2 primary race because they're saying that she does not live in that, you know, in that district. And the evidence brought forth in the suit seems to be pretty compelling to me.
Well, it appears that she doesn't. But and I think she, you know, her heart is in the right place. But I question her thought process, and because the problem with something like that is, if she were to be elected, I don't think she's probably going to beat the Robinson family. They're just a great group. But if she were to, and if she held that position, any time the Secretary of State decided to say, "Hey, you don't live in the district, and therefore you're out," they could do that. They would have every right to do that. And so that leaves the Republican Party in a terrible, terrible position. So let's say after the primary, they tell her that, then all of a sudden, you know, we're scrambling to get a candidate. You know, it'd be an absolute mess. And worse yet, after the general election, they say, hey, you know, sorry, you don't qualify. We're in absolute chaos. We don't need any more chaos. So it creates a risk that I don't think we should be taking.
Yeah, it's a potential self-inflicted gunshot wound, and I'm not a big fan of that kind of stuff. All right, now the basics of the suit were interesting because, you know, they've owned this this home, 317 acre drive in Myrtle Creek, very nice home, right? But what is listed, and that's not within the district to run against the Robinson, you know, Noah Robinson, right? You can't do that. It's not within District 2.
Outside of the district.
But
so she apparently has another, you know, she's created another pathway, is what she said to me.
She told the Secretary of State that she's living at 721 Bramblewood Lane in Canyonville. That's the address of the Falk Estates Vineyard tasting room. So, I mean, it strains credibility to go out there and say that you're living at the tasting room of a winery in Canyonville. It doesn't make sense unless for some reason people are going to do surveillance on there and they find that she's actually living in the room. Maybe she is. I don't know. But if so, that's really weird, if you ask me.
Well, I think people have, you know, what I'm hearing from people, I went up to this meeting. This is well known that she doesn't live in that. I guess her, you know, various neighbors and different people are, you know, calling her out on it. So it's pretty much clear to everybody that she doesn't live in that spot. But she's been a rep And, you know, she was able to take that position with that address, and nobody knew any better.
Well, I know, because also within the same lawsuit that John West filed, along with the other people, he's alleging that she doesn't live in House District 4 either, which is what she's the rep for, but she actually lives in House District 2. And so she doesn't have, she's not qualified for either of the positions.
And it breaks my heart. On so many different levels. I mean, she's just a lovely woman in a lot of ways, and I just, you know, it just breaks my heart that it's headed this direction. Although I did ask her a couple months ago, you know, to rethink running against the Robinson. And I think she felt that because Art was ill, that Noah wasn't qualified. Well, Noah is phenomenally qualified. He's been working with his dad.
Oh.
He's been there in every legislative session working with his dad for so many years. He's eminently qualified to do it. And so is Matthew, the young Robinson. My goodness gracious. I mean, these are brilliant young people. Matthew's a nuclear physicist. I mean, they all have PhDs in that family. They were all homeschooled by Art himself.
Yeah, but Holly, you know what's really going on here. And I don't think you're going to disagree with me when I say this. There has been the push. If anyone's truly a conservative, they want you out. The blob in Salem, the Republican blob in Salem, I'm talking about the ones that are not conservative, they just want yes votes. They just want people. They don't want Dwayne Junkers. They don't want Art Robinsons. They don't want Dennis Linthicum types. They want people they want people who are, well, I need to go and reach across the aisle to get along. And, you know,
right.
and well, some of the bill was good, and so I had to vote yes on it. I mean, those are the kind of people they want. And that's
well,
what this
is. And they're in an echo chamber, Bill. You know, they're all talking to each other, saying, you know, congratulating each other for the little bitty steps that they make, and the rest of us are rolling our eyes going, oh, come on, you know, get tough. I think the Robinsons are just the greatest. I mean, they have probably a 98% voting record as far as the Republican Party is concerned. I mean, they know when to say no.
And that's exactly why I think people have been looking to pounce on these particular conservative seats here. All right. Well, Holly,
And Dennis Linthicum. So now Dennis Linthicum's going to run for Secretary of State, and his wife's going to run for Senate, and we're going to be behind both of them, and we're going to start bringing some sanity back to the Republican Party.
No, I hope you're right about that. State Senate, though, or State Secretary of State, that's going to be a high lift. You know that. That's a high lift.
Well, yes, I think it might be, but he's got great name recognition. We'll see. We're really going to fight for him because he's another absolutely great guy. Kim Thatcher is a wonderful woman. We do have terrific Republicans out there. We need to support them.
Yeah, what's Kim going to do next, by the way? Do you know?
No, I'm not sure about that. I'm going to have to ask.
All right, just checking in. All right, Holly, appreciate the update on inside baseball politics here with the state of Oregon and the local politics, too, and so much more. And oh, boy. And now we have this toodle-doo in Jackson County where the Republican women end up keeping the clubhouse open. And at the same time, the Jackson County Republican Party was shutting it down. But I'll have to talk with them about that. All right. So you take care.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Thanks for being you.
All right. Appreciate you calling. Thanks again. 7 o'clock, KMED, KMED HD1, Eagle Point, Medford, KCMD, Grants Pass.
At Lithia Body and Paint, we understand how traumatic auto collisions can be, so we're here to make your repair as easy and as stress-free as humanly possible. That includes friendly personal estimates and service, or virtual estimating with pickup and delivery. At Lithia Body and Paint, we can work with your insurance company, plus arrange towing of your vehicle, along with transportation for you to and from your home or work. Service, speed, accuracy. Since 1946, that's Lithia Body and Paint on Bullock Road in Medford.
Is your business or personal tax return under IRS audit? Tell the IRS First Response Resolution has got it. First Response Resolution in Eagle Point, your local tax resolution experts. Visit firstresponseirs.com and talk to Zach in Eagle Point. He'll defend your rights as a taxpayer.
Pure Talk believes in American values and that free should mean exactly that. Free. Well, switch to Pure Talk today and you'll get a free Samsung 5G smartphone. Now, qualifying plans start at just $35 a month for unlimited talk, text, 15 gigs of data, and, of course, mobile hotspot. Just dial #250, say the keyword Pure Talk, claim your eligibility for your free brand new Samsung 5G smartphone. Start saving on wireless today and switch to my cell phone company, Pure Talk.
Your smile is the key to your health and confidence. Do you know that it is possible in a single day to replace a mouthful of bad teeth or ill-fitting dentures with a beautiful implant-supported smile? For so many of my patients, this has been a life-changing experience. Hi, I'm Dr. Robert Johnson of Dental Excellence. I met a man in my office who came for a free consultation. He said to me, "Dr. Johnson, I quit going out to eat with my friends. I cover my mouth when I smile. I don't laugh out loud like I used to. I'm tired of all the denture adhesive and not tasting my food." Can you or someone you know relate to this man's story? I'm here to tell you that dental implants can solve your problems and give you a great reason to smile. Start now to regain your health and confidence. Come meet me and my amazing team. The consultation is free.
Call 541-779-6170 or visit MedfordDentalExcellence.com.
Dental Excellence, changing lives one smile at a time.
The Phil Myers Show on 106.3 KMET and 99.3 KCMD.
It's a couple minutes after 7. We'll check town hall news here in just a moment. John, you wanted to weigh in on the election of, what is Dan Mason? Is that his name? Give me the whole story there.
Yeah. Dan Mason is a very good friend of mine. He's a true patriot. He's very conservative. He's the one that's put together over the last 7 years these big events up in Portland where he introduced Cliff Bentz to the greater Oregon audience. He brought in Kristi Noem for 2 days. Mike Pompeo he brought in. He brought in Vice President Pence before he turned on everyone. And he's the real organizer. He's truly a conservative. He works, 40 hours a week without ever getting paid.
And so this is the liaison then between Oregon Republican Party and the National Republican.
Yeah.
Right?
There's
okay.
No one in Oregon that could do a better job than Dan Mason. And when off the air, I'll give you his cell phone number and you can have him on your show and talk to him and let everybody get to know who he is.
I would like that very much. So let me put you on hold. So this is not a problem with Solomon Yu saying, hey, put the votes over there, because you can understand how I was a little like, uh-oh. You know.
Well, Solomon Yu knows how organized Dan Mason is.
All right. I mean,
and he has contacts with the bigger party in Washington, D.C., but he's a very good person.
All right. Contacts are certainly the order. Hang on. I'll get the number from you, John. All right. 4 minutes after 7, we'll catch up on what else is going on next.
Nominations are open for...